From WYPR, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Today, two big ideas to improve public health in Baltimore. Fresh produce can be hard to come by in the city's Sandtown neighborhood. That's why Chef Osar Daniels has created a farm to grow fruits and vegetables for the community and educate kids about plant science. He tells us about his plans to expand. And then, a safe space to sleep can be life-saving for infants. Chantel Roberts has made it her mission to educate parents and provide a safe and portable alternative to a crib.
Some of these sleep-related deaths, the parents either are not informed on what the best practices are, or they just don't have a mechanism for the baby to sleep in, to practice the safe sleep.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Kast. We're on the record. Cucumbers, watermelon, sunflowers, locally grown in West Baltimore. Might be hard to imagine a farm in the middle of the city, but that's one of the many missions of Osar Daniels, a 2017 Open Society Institute Community Fellow. The Open Society Institute is a nonprofit supporting projects in Baltimore's underserved communities, from music therapy for refugees to advocacy for the disabled. Daniels is a lifelong resident of Sandtown, Winchester. He's also a farmer, chef, and community activist. For the next 18 months, he'll work on an effort called the Greater Mondawmin Empowerment Project. Osar Daniels, welcome to On the Record.
Thank you. Good morning.
Across from the Gilmore Homes Housing Project, you run a farm. How big is a farm? And what do you grow there?
Well, there's four different lots, and they pretty much cover the footprint of about a total of about 10 row homes at this moment. So in these lots, we grow all sorts of foods and vegetables that are free for the community to pick as they wish. So through canvassing the community, we grow those foods that people want. So collard greens, kale, broccoli, onions, garlic, tomatoes. What are some other things we grow? Oh, sweet potatoes, white potatoes, okra, hot peppers, fish peppers. A lot of different foods that people are familiar with and some foods that people aren't so familiar with.
I was going to say, I'm not familiar with fish peppers.
Yeah. African fish pepper is a variety of, you could say like a variety of a cayenne pepper that has actually been grown and cultivated. Yeah.
During the summer, the farm hosts classes for kids in the neighborhood. What do they learn?
Oh, the Young Farmers Project. So the Young Farmers Project is awesome. Children learn about health and wellness, culinary arts, and STEM through urban agriculture.
Science, technology, engineering, and math through farming?
Yes.
Explain that.
Well, you know, we set up things like water catchment systems. And then we learn about the math of that. How many rain barrels do you need to cover a certain square footage of land? You know, we also set up solar panels so that we can have light. And we get deeper into more green and renewable energy resources. You know, so science is interwoven in all parts of agriculture, even when it's just talking about plants and the different kind of cultivars of plants or different varieties of plants, you know, and hybridization and collecting seeds and, you know, looking at pollination. The science is very deep, and definitely the biology is very exciting to the children.
Do the young farmer, the learning farmers, get a chance to pick crops that they want grown?
Yes, they definitely do. They get to pick crops and they get to see them grow from seed and see them to their fruit and stage. And they also get to then prepare those foods in delicious dishes or maybe prepare them into products that they can give or sell to their family members or people in the community, which also has a component of science when you talk about actually the culinary arts aspect and the science of food, you know, all the way down to what makes food nutritious.
Yeah, I understand you have plans to grow crops that can be turned into more valuable products, like grapes that can be made into jelly.
Yes. So all the food is free except for some of our crops that we're using to make the farm more sustainable, economically sustainable. And these funds will go back into the farm and to the children's stipends for the Young Farmers Program. So these crops are things like the grapes. We're looking at using the grapes for the pickling the grape leaves. We're looking at jellies. We're looking at juices. We're looking at wine. We're looking at grape seed extract. So we're looking at those things and how they can benefit the community. And the bottom line is that we're trying to create jobs, because the underlying issue behind so-called food deserts or food apartheid is that that there's an economic disparity that makes food not easily accessed to these areas. You know, so growing things like hops, we're experimenting with hops, and we're going to expand this project. That there's a worldwide shortage of hops, and there's a lot of people who have microbrewery.
There's a shortage of hops.
Yes, there is, you know, and it's a kind of crop where it can help to also create jobs.
You just mentioned, maybe you had earlier and I missed it, stipends mm-hmm. for the Young Farmers.
Yes, yes. So the Young Farmers Program, this was our second summer, and we were able to give the youth educational stipends for about 2 months through the program. And the goal is to extend this program all year round. So this is amazing. You know, the children are from age 6 to 11, and literally right across the street from their houses in the Gilmore Homes housing project. And it allows them to be able to not only bring in a little income, you know, but also to experience what it's like to learn an occupational skill and also get that economic reward. You know, it's important
to make that connection.
Yes.
As you mentioned, the farm is open for residents to come and pick what they need. What kind of reaction have you gotten from residents of the neighborhood?
Oh, the reaction is overwhelming support and love, because before the farm was even created, community members knew what was going to happen, that they had input. Community members were part of the farm, are part of the farm in building it. So they knew what to expect. It wasn't a situation where a farm just appeared in their neighborhood. You know, they're part of it. And the reaction for people when they can just leave right out of their doorstep and go grab some food and go back in the house and prepare it, it's amazing. It's empowering. And it gives people hope. It fills a void. But it also does something spiritually, because it changes the landscape. These were vacant lots. They were filled with trash, dilapidated housing. This area has some of the highest dilapidated housing per area, vacant lots that are just become areas that are filled with trash, you know, and dumping grounds, you know, a place where pests can just congregate. So, you know, when you transform these places, it shows that something can be changed in a neighborhood. And when people, residents from the community, actually do it themselves, it shows that they can reclaim their communities, and they can empower themselves.
That's Asar Daniels, farmer and 2017 Open Society Institute Community Fellow, here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He'll be working to establish the Greater Mondawmin Empowerment Project in Baltimore, Sandtown, Winchester neighborhood. I want to pick up on this idea of rearranging the physical environment. Partnering with you on this project is the grassroots community organization Tubman House. With them, you will be building a kind of underground greenhouse. Where is this happening?
Ah, glad you mentioned that. So with Tubman House, we are building a biocellar.
What is a biocellar?
Oh, so a biocellar is the combination of above-ground greenhouse with a subterranean greenhouse. The inspiration from this came from one of the key leaders in Tubman House, Dominique Stevenson. She researched a farm that is actually a vineyard in Cincinnati, Chateau Huff. And what was done there was that it was an abandoned house where the above-ground portion of the house was deconstructed, not demolished, deconstructed. And the cellar remained intact. Now, on top of that cellar, they were able to build what you would look at like a greenhouse, with a south-facing glass or polycarbonate side that would allow sun to shine through. But the genius of using the cellar is that it maintains the heat, because when you go below the frost level, temperatures stay more constant. So you have a very green, you have a very efficient building structure. What this will allow us to do is to grow food all year round without having a lot of inputs. You know, the biocellar would include like a large water cistern. And also in the back portion of that, it will allow us to have a community meeting space. Because currently, right now, all of our activities are outdoors. You know, it's an outdoor classroom. And we do a lot of activities, clothing drives, book school giveaways, tutoring. You know, people from the community are former teachers. They teach literacy. You know, so all these things happen, but it's all outside. So the goal is, with this biocellar, we will not only be able to fill that void of a lack of food, but also indoor community meeting space.
Altogether. So you're using the future tense. The biocellar does not exist yet.
No, it does not exist yet. The current location for the biocellar, we've been in negotiation with the city for about 2 years now. And with the support of the city, they're going to allow us to be able to use this site, to manage it, and to use it as an effective use of green space, making this biocellar possible.
Is it close to the farm?
It is. It is exactly right beside the farm.
And another part of your OSI project involves creating a food co-op in the neighborhood whose residents don't have much access to fresh food. Tell us about the co-op.
Yes. So the co-op is just the other aspect of the of making these things economically sustainable. You know, the issue is that when we're looking at so-called food deserts, I like to call it food apartheid, that there's lots of stores that are there, you know, but the stores don't offer the goods that people need, and definitely not at a price that they need. There's a high markup on simple things such as like toilet paper. You know, people will pay sometimes double or triple for these kind of goods, you know, and it's not fair. You know, it's not justice. So with the co-op, we're looking at not only using goods from the farm that is grown, but also having a food buying club where there's other goods like toiletries and other things that people need, you know, and getting those things and giving it to members at cost, not making a profit from them, just making those things available to people. You know, at this time when we have even more grocery stores closing in our areas, I'm sure you heard about the Target that's leaving the area, you know, and that's just one more place where we had some sort of good products that's now leaving the area.
You have a background as a chef. You own a catering company with your wife, and your father was an herbalist. What does it mean to you to help the community grow its own fresh, nutritious food?
It's so key to my heart that we see the connection between food and health and economics. With the lessons that my father taught me, he was a sharecropper. He grew up in the Jim Crow South. Those lessons of them, the empowerment that people had even amongst all that oppression, you know, those lessons stay with me. And through those lessons, you know, what I saw was a people that were resourceful, even in a place where resources seemed to always be taken from you systematically all the time. But people were resourceful and they made a way, you know. They saw options when they were given no options. And that's what I strive to do with the Greater Mount Dominant Empowerment Project, is to give the youth, let them see more options, even amongst what you see when you look out your window with everything that's going on in the area now.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Asar Daniels is a farmer, chef, and 2017 Open Society Institute Community Fellow. He'll use his grant to grow the Greater Mondawmin Empowerment Project. Quick break on the record. I'm Sheila Cast. When we come back, an effort to make sure that all babies have a safe place to sleep. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.